part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com.
This is Part-Time Fanboy, and I am Christian Horn, and I am here with my friend Jason Holtham, who who is back again to discuss the epic Southern Gothic series Preacher, the comic book series Preacher.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And we are on to the third arc of the series at this point, which consists of issues, I believe it's 8 through 13?
8 through 13 or 8 through 12? 8 through 12.
8 through 12. Five issues. And this is called All in the Family, from what I understand. This arc is called All in the Family, which completely makes sense.
Yes. Very, very much so.
Yeah. And
oh, man.
Well, before we get started, you started another podcast recently. Why don't you tell the listeners about that?
Oh, sure. I started a podcast with my buddy Larry called Deep Cut Nerd, where we talk about very, very deep and pressing issues of nerddom sort of across all speculative fiction. It's sort of set up like we're at an after-work bar where we both work for mysterious figures. It bleeds into it, but we just talk about Star Wars and Star Trek and random things. Our first episode was about co-pilots in speculative fiction and grinding down the list and ranking them. I think we are randomly turning into a thing where we wind up ranking who wins in sort of speculative fiction. And then the one we just posted today was about anthropomorphic and zoomorphic superheroes and characters. The winner of which was Howard the Duck.
Howard the Duck.
And Squirrel Girl.
Not from the movie.
Came out on top. Not from the movie, no.
But Squirrel Girl's not anthropomorphic. She's just Squirrel Girl.
She's zoomorphic. I mean, we had a whole conversation about, you know, Spider-Man and whether or not Batman is zoomorphic. You know, people who dress up as animals or
furries.
Look like animals. Furries, exactly.
Or fuzzies. Or they're furries, right? I think it's furries. I don't know.
I'm
never into that. Yeah. okay, cool. That sounds great. Everyone check out Deep Cut Nerd. But for now, if you're listening, you're listening to Part-Time Fanboy. And let's get to it. I mean, this is pretty much... This is messed up. It's a messed up arc.
This is a very messed up, super intense arc. And honestly, this is like my favorite arc of this comic book.
Yeah,
maybe second favorite.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that this would, I mean, rereading it from what I remember, this would definitely have to be the big one, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, maybe we'll come across another arc that I'll remember just as fondly, but this is sort of where I think this arc is really, well, you really get into the nitty-gritty of Jesse Custer, right? That's the first
thing.
And then the second thing is I really felt like by the end of this arc that, you know, the first two arcs that we read kind of ended and it made it seem almost like... hey, this could end here, you know, with the final issue. Like this could be it. And this is sort of the first arc where I feel like they've kind of made the leap and been like, okay, we're going to continue with this. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. Like, we got the green light. We're going all the way. Don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, it does feel like that. I mean, it feels like the most mature of all the arcs, too.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. Like, this feels, just rereading it again, it feels to me, to bring in another comic book, it reminds me of Sandman and The Sound of Her Wings. And it happens much earlier in Sandman, where you get to that issue, you know, at it's like the ninth or tenth issue, the first issue with Death, where it's like, this is what this comic really, really is about. Like, let's just, like, this is what it's working with on sort of all, when it's firing on all cylinders. And that's what this feels like to me. This feels like, you know, the earlier stuff is all great, but it's a little wacky. You've got Art's face. The arc before this is so, like, over the top with our poor unlucky John Toole and the world's unluckiest cop and sort of the craziness of the serial killer. But this is so, like, deathly serious and in a way kind of earnest that it's like, this is what we're really here to discuss.
You know? It's interesting. It doesn't, you're absolutely right. It doesn't, and maybe it's because Cassidy isn't in this arc, but it doesn't really fall back on any of that sort of dark humor, you know, as a crutch. You know what I mean? It's very sort of, like you said, I mean, it's very forthright, it's very direct, and it doesn't mess around. It doesn't take any prisoners, you know?
No.
Yeah.
No. Oh, man, it is so brutal. Like, oh, God.
It's pretty hardcore, and if it's the sort of thing that any listeners ever get to read for the first time, like, if I remember reading this arc for the first time and just being like, are they going to get out of this? Like, I have no idea, like, what is going to happen. Like, this is definitely the arc where I sort of felt like, you know, it was kind of a new book. So you were like, well, yeah, of course. But this definitely had the feel where you were sort of like getting like, oh, this is playing for keeps. Like, people could die, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, and it still earns it. I mean, you know, and this is the arc, you know, do we avoid spoilers?
We could spoil it. God, it's been around for almost 20 years.
Exactly.
If you haven't read it yet, then hang up the line. I mean, get off the line. Exactly. But go read it and come back. This is the podcast about Preacher. For Preacher fans, let's just put it that way. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they shoot frickin' Tulip in the head.
Yeah.
It's the end of the first issue of this arc.
Yeah.
And second issue. And it seems like there is no coming back from that.
Yeah.
Like, she is shot point blank in the head. Dead. I love the art in it, how they, when they've dragged her body out, they've got the whole blood smear. Like, they sell this. Yeah. But it still doesn't feel like a cheat when she gets brought back, because, you know, she's brought back by God himself, which is one of my favorite characters in this book.
That's interesting. You know, it's really funny because, you know, I mean, the whole book, the first issue opens up with a flashback, and I forgot how intense it was. And that first page is basically Jesse's dad. You know, Jesse is a little boy in 1974, and the dad's getting his head blown off by these two, like, redneck guys, you know?
Yeah.
And you're just like, what the hell is this? And then, you know, the arc fast forward and, like, to, you know, quote unquote now, and you've got this situation where Jesse and Tulip are in trouble, and you get the intro to their grandmother, you know, in this first issue. And it's interesting because they talk a little bit about Tulip's backstory, and that fills up half the first issue or most of it.
Yeah, right.
But then, you know, at this point, the rest is all Jesse.
Yeah. I mean, it's the story of Jesse's life entirely, and it fills in so many gaps that, in a way, you know, like, at this point in the book, you weren't really thinking about, like, how did this guy become a preacher? And they've been so great about his and Tulip's backstory and the occasional references to whatever happened in Phoenix and the way they used to be, that it's wonderful to get it filled in, and it's still so surprising and interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Jesse's dad is such a great character.
Oh my
As
God.
little as time as we get with him, like Jesse C John Custer is just the best kind of badass.
Yeah. It's interesting because you know, Tulip's sort of backstory dovetails into Jessie mm-hmm. and her getting captured, because basically right. she had gotten so desperate for money, she had become a hit woman, and they go back to sort of confront the guy that she owes money to. And, you know, mm-hmm. it's a setup for sort of like, oh, damn, this scene is going to be badass. Like, Jesse's yep. going to kick some ass. He's going to use the word on everyone, and everyone's going to. And then it's just, it's interrupted by these two characters, Jody and TC, just, you know, barnstorming the situation and just kicking ass yep. and taking names, you know?
Yeah, exactly, and proving to be invulnerable to the word.
Yeah,
and it's the first time, honestly, in this book, we see Jesse scared.
Yeah,
he's terrified when he sees Jody, and that alone tells us how terrifying Jody is.
Yeah, because
that if after everything we've seen,
yeah.
this is the one person Jesse is scared of.
Yeah, I mean, up until this point, he's been kind of like a badass, not really backing down from anyone. I mean, with this sensitive streak, but if there's a fight or somebody's standing up to him, he's not going to back down. And
yeah, he's not even afraid of the state of killers that much.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so at this point, Jody and TC like come in, and you're right, he's absolutely terrified. I'm looking at the page right now, and he's like, and it's not just terrified, it's like, what the fuck am I going to do right now? Like,
right.
the wheels are spinning. Dylan, the artist, does such a great job, you know, with facial expressions, particularly, mm-hmm. and panel transitions, particularly in this issue, that, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, I mean, you see what's going on in Jesse's head, and he's like, this is it. Like, I'm done.
Yeah. I mean, it's all, you're right about the art. Like, I was really noticing the art and how good it is and how much of it is conveyed with that. Because I've realized I've sort of missed it. They don't do, like, any sort of thought bubbles.
Yeah.
Like, there's no narration. It's just all carried on that, like, gobsmacked look of him seeing Jody, who then just proceeds to kill everyone and be the worst kind of badass.
Yeah. And even Jesse gets to the point, you know, where they kidnap him and Tulip, mm-hmm. Jody and TC, where he actually kind of begs for Tulip, like, just let her go, you know, like, you don't need her, you know?
Yeah. And he's so, and like, he keeps lying about what she means and just trying to get her out of there and away. And again, in that, like, great, you know, that great art, just the hangdog look on his face when TC finally mentions Phoenix, and implies that they're the reason he left Tulip all those years ago.
Yeah.
It's just, like, you can feel the sort of the collapse and the defeat and the heartbreak for Jesse that, like, he has failed massively here.
Yeah. Like, somehow, you know, things have just gotten out of beyond his control.
Right.
And he can't handle it. So, I mean, they get kidnapped to this place called Angelville, which is the sort of like his family estate.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Which is run by his grandmother.
Right over the Texas border.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's one of these things from, like, again, a Southern Gothic nightmare, where it's just this sort of like almost abandoned. I mean, I'm looking at the page right now where Angelville gets introduced, and you've got the burning crosses. But there's definitely a sort of Psycho House feel to it. I feel.
Oh yeah.
You know,
I mean,
that,
look,
like,
there's only one light is lit.
Yeah.
No one lives in this huge house.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. And it's very like old school. And I was thinking when I saw this page, like Norman Bates and Norman's mother. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm thinking, like, now that I'm talking about it, Psycho, there must have been a huge influence on this whole arc, I can imagine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, certainly visually and with the relationship, you know, that he has with his mother and the grandmother and the kind of woman that, you know, Marie Langell is.
Yeah.
It is definitely definitely some Norman Bates overtones sprinkled throughout this.
Yeah, big time, yeah. Big time. And then at the end, you get, end of the first issue, there's that huge splash page. You know, and it's like, good evening, Miss Marie. And it's her visual introduction, because up until that point, she's kind of just talked about by the two guys that have kidnapped them. But now you see her and she literally is just this dried up, shriveled monster of a thing.
Bald. Her hands are like claws. Like, the hands really strike me how, like, horrible and gnarled, and but tipped with those the super sharp fingernails, and her whole medical getup, and she just looks like death.
Just
death walking.
And she's been so alive forever. And again, the amazing look in her eyes, where you're just like, there's nothing good in this person.
No.
Like, from the outset.
No.
You know?
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It's going to give me nightmares.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. And then, of course, Tulip decides that she's going to stand up to her. And it's like, yeah, that's the wrong move. You know? No. And, and Jody smacks her. And
Jody punches her.
Yeah, he punches her across the face. And Jesse starts making, threats. And obviously... You're sort of at this point where it's like, they're hollow.
Yeah. And he's tied to a chair. He's outnumbered. He's clearly, there's nothing that he can do to get out of this.
Yeah. And then she drops the bomb with the line, I have the Lord on my side,
Yeah.
And it's just like, uh-oh, what did we step into here? You know, she even mentions the Saint of Killers in Genesis, and it's like, holy cow.
Right.
We really are in over our head,
Right.
We do not have that, ace of spades in our back pocket, to get us out of this situation,
Yeah, no, he can't use the word. She knows everything, so it's not, he has no secrets he can hold over her head. She has all of the power here. And of course, at this point, the question is whether or not does she actually, what does she mean she has the Lord on her side?
Exactly. You know,
can we trust her? Like, what is she talking about?
Yeah.
And so that, like, all the mystery parts of your brain start going.
Yeah, you're definitely wondering, like, what the heck is happening? What have we gotten ourselves into? And it's a really great start to the arc.
Yeah.
It's an amazing start to the arc, and so the next issue is really where you sort of get the intro to his family backstory, and you're sort of left on a cliffhanger in that first issue where Tulip is like, hey, I think you owe it to me that, I need to, know what's going on. And Jesse finally, he sort of capitulates and he's like, okay, I'm going to tell you. But this second issue is such a great opening because God is sort of introduced, right?
Yeah, it's our first moment with God, and the first time that we think maybe she's right, maybe it is actually God talking to her.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when you get the ghostly light and she's all alone, it's kind of terrifying to think that that's what they may actually be up against.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. Well, it's finally, because that's the interesting thing, is that this whole thing has been sort of like a hunt for God. And, it's interesting that none of them ever thought, like, oh, well, he's probably going to make a preemptive strike or a decision.
Right.
And that's what this whole arc is. It's basically God using these awful people as a preemptive, I'm going to try. And it's very biblical, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very like, hey, I'm God, do what I want or else. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Kill your own son to prove that you're faithful to me. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's very rooted, as messed up as it is to say about Preacher. I mean, that sort of aspect of the, God character is very biblical, where,
totally.
Yeah, especially
totally biblical.
Yeah, especially as you get to the end, you know, where, you know, spoiler, we're jumping ahead, but you know, Tulip is revived by God.
Yeah.
She gets her head blown off and God brings her back, and his whole thing is like, okay, I've shown you what I can do. Now just tell Jesse to back off, you know.
To leave me alone.
Yeah. And that's all I want.
That scene, like, I've been thinking about this for a couple of days, like, as I was, like, revisiting these issues and rethinking about it. You know, just, like, not to get super, super personal, but, like, this comic book hit my life at a time when I was really trying to figure out, like, my relationship to God or faith or the church or whatever, and it so informed that in a good way.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh.
In a really good way. Like, I had a complicated whatever history with it. And this vision of this super petty, in a way, God, you know, in a later issue, I'm jumping way ahead, an issue after this, Tulip describes him as being just like this little man, and just like his sort of great human exasperation in dealing with Tulip when he does later on is just something that I found so delightful.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
And this sort of cosmology and John, you know, the character that we're about to meet probably the most in this next issue, John Custer, had a lot to do with that as well. And like his kind of worldview that he breaks down for Jesse, a few pages from now, is something that also like factored into it. That this book, and in particularly this arc, just had a lot to do with my spiritual upbringing.
That's interesting. Because for me personally, I had already sort of become agnostic by that point, you know. And so it was, for me, it was definitely one of these things where, it was sort of a validation of my worldview, you know what I'm saying? Or my religious view, where I was like, I, you know, because of, again, personal circumstances, if there was a God, I always figured, like, this guy is not a cool dude, you know what I mean?
Right.
Or, you know, is a very petty, I mean, if there is one, you know, and I'm not trying to offend people, you know, there may be, there may not, but you gotta admit, like, people starving in Africa, you know, women, people being beheaded in the Middle East, blah blah blah, you know, and I don't want any emails or anything like that, but I'm just saying, like, for me, it wasn't a validation of that God is an awful thing. It was more a validation of, like, oh, maybe there are other people like me who feel sort of the same way. You know what I mean? Not exactly feel, because it's too simplistic to say, like, I feel like God would be an awful person, because that's not true, because a lot of good things have happened too. But it would be, it's for me, it was like, it showed me that at least Garth Ennis, or, you know, the writer of the book, at the very least, he thought, like, yeah, if there was a God, maybe he wouldn't be the nicest guy, you know, or
exactly.
He wouldn't be as simplistic as people like to paint him. And I remember reading this whole book and just being like, wow, you know, there's somebody out there that maybe thinks about things sort of on the same level as I do, you know?
Yeah,
it's really interesting. But, you know, to sort of get back to the book, this second issue is definitely where you get the lowdown on Jesse's parents and how, you know, he ended up at Angelville, you know, and it's a really great story, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Jesse's mom is on the run. She meets his dad, John Custer, who is a Vietnam vet, and he's just come home from the war. And she's basically doing what a lot of sort of quote unquote hippies were doing at the time, which is like calling him baby killer. And she spits in his face, right?
Yep.
But then the rest of...
Yep.
Yeah, and the rest of the issue is basically how these two people who meet in such a terrible way kind of end up coming to love each other, right? And need each other.
Yeah.
And it's great stuff.
Oh, God, it's so beautiful. And, like, the characters are so, like, again, that sort of, like, that sense of earnestness that, like, bubbles through in this that doesn't have the sort of ironic remove of the other issues in such a way, because they're both such, like, earnest and wonderful people. And, like, holy crap, John Custer is just just cool. Yeah. Just too damn cool for school. Well, he's just great.
It's great in that he forgives her immediately for what she does, mm-hmm. you know, and then it's really funny because it's only really, and it's not even a whole issue of introduction. I mean, most of it is their story, but it's so well told and so well played out that you kind of like immediately fall for them, you know?
Yeah.
You immediately sympathize with them. You immediately are rooting for them. And then, you know, when terrible things happen to them, you're just as crushed as you would have been if it had happened to, you know, Jesse and Tulip.
Exactly. I mean, you're so rooting for them just because they've got they're so honest and simple and like sort of pure in a way. Like, it's presented as such a pure love at first sight, even in a terrible sight, but you know, like, so instant and connection, so instant a connection that it's just great to be a part of. And yeah, I was rooting for them so hard.
Yeah.
And that is so sad.
Yeah it's an amazing story because they, very much like Jesse and Tulip, get kidnapped back to Angelville, right? I guess it's
Angelville.
Yeah, Angelville. And you know, on the night that they decide to make their escape, you know, John Custer explains to like little Jesse, like, he doesn't explain what they're going to do, but he sort of gives him a talk. And mm-hmm. there's a couple of lines in there that are just amazingly written. Yes. But there's this bit, you know, you got to be one of the good guys, son, because there's way too many of the bad. And it just encapsulates everything. And it's so like sort of super heroic too, in a way. It's so mm-hmm. like Christopher Reeve, Superman, like, you're not here to score touchdowns. Like, you're here for something better. It's sort of the mission statement that's handed down from father to son. And it's something that just rings true through the whole book, especially with what's coming later.
Yeah, I mean, it is that time when you learn the guiding principles for Jesse's whole life, and everything crystallizes. And it's also that whole speech here before, you know, just to be like John Wayne. You don't take no shit off fools, and you judge a person by what's in them, not how they look, and you do the right thing.
Exactly.
And it's like, those three simple precepts are just great. Like, that is a pretty good way. Don't take any crap off of any fools. Do the right thing and judge people by what's in them. And like, that's it. And
that's pretty much all you need, right?
Yeah, right?
You know?
Like, that's as pretty good an ethos as you could have going out in the world.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just so sad because immediately after that, that's the moment where the father gets his head blown off, like when they're while they're trying to escape. And another great moment where Jesse's crying and Jody basically calls him a fucking little crybaby.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's like, that's the last time I ever cried, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Because John Wayne never did.
Yeah, exactly. Which, you know, whatever my thoughts about John Wayne, I'm going to go with the fictional sort of stand-up guy, you know, that exists in the world of this book or in Jesse Custer's head. But so then you get sort of the little bit of you get the intro to his best friend, Billy Bob.
Yeah.
Who is the little bit of kind of like dark humor that most of this storyline is lacking, because he's deformed from generations of inbreeding and he only has one eye.
Yes, he only has one eye.
And he's as redneck as they get.
Exactly.
Ignorant redneck.
You know what's funny? I've never really made, like, I actually took the book all of these years until literally this second at like face value, and that it was because of the chemicals out in the swamp, and it wasn't because of the years of inbreeding.
Oh, really?
I always took it as like, oh yeah, you know, that's fine. And now I'm like, oh, That, of course, and that's he and Laurie are the young. Oh.
Oh, really?
That's oh, so the funny. Penny just dropped.
That's so funny. Yeah, that's funny that. No, because I was always like, I guess I'm remembering this. I was like, oh, yeah, no, it's inbreeding. Like, it's so,
it's so obviously inbreeding.
Yeah, yeah, I know, right? Yeah. I know, right? It's so great. And it's so great yeah. the in that conversation, the look that Jesse kind of has on his face. Like, he gets that his friend is like, yeah, he's a moron. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yep. You know, when he explains, like, I'm going to marry my sister and my, you know, she's going to marry, they're going to marry and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's like,
yeah,
yeah, it's no good. It's no good. But then there's just so many good bits in this issue because yeah. you get the talk from Grandma, which mm-hmm. is basically like talking about God.
Yep.
And I love how after she's done explaining what God is to Jesse, he's very much like, she's like, isn't it nice to have a friend like God? And he's like, no, Grandma, it's kind of scary.
Yeah. And it's her like, description of God is terrifying.
And well, it's funny because so much of that, again, comes from a lot of like serious religious upbringing. And yeah. I don't know about you, but you know, we were raised Catholic. I know that. And, you know, a lot of God's, you know, the descriptions when we were kids, you know, when I was a kid, it terrified the hell out of me. I was absolutely. Like, if I'm bad, I'm going to hell. Right.
Yeah. And, he watches me all the time. Yeah. All of these rules. He knows everything I'm thinking, not yeah. even just what I'm doing. It's totally frightening.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it very much is, you know, the logical response, but Grandma's yeah. not having it. And that's it, you know. And, you know, it's also at the towards the end of this issue where we get introduced to the coffin.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment where his mother is finally killed by her own yep. flesh and blood, you know,
yeah.
Because of the fact that Jesse's dog gets a little frisky, he decides Jody nails him to a post. By the, oh. It's just like insane.
Joey's so insane.
Yeah, he's so crazy. It's just like, wow, this guy's such an asshole. And kills his dog by nailing the dog's head to a fence. And of course, Jesse gets super pissed off, as a little kid would. And he calls him fucker, fucker, dirty fucker. Yeah. And, you know, Grandma's like, and boys with dirty mouths go in the coffin. And that's when the mom, as any parent would, has had enough. And she's like, no, yeah. you're not putting him in the coffin. You know?
Yeah. And I did it, but not him.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. You're not, you did it to me, but you're not doing it to him. And that's the moment of defiance where Grandma's just like, that's it. I'm done with you.
Yep.
Like, I'm cutting you off. I don't need you anymore. I just need the kid because he can breed and he'll carry our bloodline on, you know?
Yep.
And that's the moment she gets dragged away to be murdered by Jody. And, you know, he gets put in the coffin, which is Grandma's method of punishment for her kin. Basically puts Jesse in a coffin and lowers him to the bottom of the swamp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's an air hole. He can breathe.
Yeah.
But he's in a coffin underneath the swamp.
Yes.
And exactly. He's 7.
Yes, exactly. And he's left in there for about a week.
Yep. This time it's about a week.
Yeah. And, you know, when he comes out, I love the name of this chapter, How I Learned to Love the Lord. The third.
Oh.
Yeah, and yeah. When he's let out, like anyone would be, any 7-year-old would be, the fight's out of him, and he's just giving in, and that's it. Like, he was going to study to become a preacher.
Yep, his mom is gone, his dad is dead, there's no one left but Grandma.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And Jody and TC. And, you know, the story continues tragically where you get the chapter where Billy Bob mm-hmm. gets murdered by TC because Billy Bob's hiding in the barn as TC tries to fuck a chicken.
I think he succeeds. I don't think he tried. I think he is successful.
Yeah. And he gets discovered by TC by accident. And he basically, TC cuts Billy Bob's throat. So Jesse's dad has been murdered by these people, his mother, his dog, and his best friend. So these are not nice people. I mean,
they're not, not at all.
By the third issue of this arc, these are the scum of the earth. I mean, there's just no redeeming qualities to them whatsoever.
Yes.
You know?
Though, I will make a case for Jody as a wonderful villain in that, like, Jody makes a good point later. That I feel comfortable in saying it's a good point because a very good character agrees with Jody's point about standing up for your own kin.
Yeah.
So and Jesse makes a point that, like, Jody taught him everything about fighting and staying alive. Jody's terrible. I mean, he's a stone cold sociopath.
So you're making a point for abusive fathers is what you're doing.
I'm just making a point that he has...
You're the lobbyist for abusive fathers everywhere.
that's my new role. I'm just saying, not redeeming. It's not redeemed by his less than horrible qualities, but I'm just saying they're useful.
Yeah.
Useful qualities that he taught Jesse.
Well, you know, Jason, I would... That's great. I'm sure Hitler loved children too, but
he was a vegetarian.
This is the issue where he basically snaps his elbow. Like,
yes,
Jody snaps Jesse's elbow like out of its socket, because Jesse kicks the crap out of TC once he murders his best friend, and Jody gets in the way and. Not only does he snap his elbow, but he puts him back in the coffin.
Yep, then they put him back in the coffin for 2 weeks. Oh, God.
It's horrible.
And this again is, like I said, Jody's a sociopath. The piece de resistance is that they weight the coffin down with Billy Bob's body.
Oh, I know. When I read that, I was just like, oh, my God.
Oh, God.
Oh,
holy.
Man. I mean, Jesse emerges from the coffin and he's like, Bob. And Jody's just like, hell, boy, all that time down there, you never wondered what that weight was on the lid. And it's just like, oh, my God.
Holy crap.
They just have no limits. Like, that's the thing. It's like they have no limits. And it's even more infuriating because they're just like in this small little house plantation that is their like cell of power. And, you know, out in the real world, they'd be nothing. But in this sort of like little backward swamp world, like they are like the kings of everything, you know?
Yeah. And where no one else can get to them. It's just, oh, God.
Yeah.
Just terrifying.
But it's after this that, you know, well, Jesse goes and he tells Billy Bob's family what happened. And mm-hmm. I don't know who that is, like his dad, Billy Bob's dad, probably.
Dad, brother.
Yeah.
Brother, dad.
And he basically, you know, I mean, he reams into Jesse about his family. He's like, you know, and he kind of says in a way, like, you know, it's because of you that my son's relationship with you that my son got murdered, you know?
Yeah.
And there's nothing we can do about it. And that's the final step that makes Jesse leave. He's just like, screw it. I got nothing left to lose.
Yep. There's no reason to go back. Finally, his chance to get out. 18-year-old Jesse Custer loosed on the world.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where he meets Tulip.
And finally, we get to Tulip and that terrible hair.
I don't know. It kind of worked in the 90s.
So
it's kind of like very 80s, 90s. I kind of like it.
It's so bad.
I like it. It's a little boyish, but, you know, it's like a bowl cut. It's kind of weird.
It's a bowl cut with the undershaving in the back. And I do remember those haircuts, and they were terrible then. It's terrible.
Well, I think they worked for a certain kind of goth girl. I don't know. Maybe. But this is great because they establish their beginnings of the relationship, and they finally get into, like you said earlier, the reason why he abandons her.
Yep.
And
which, of course,
it's because Jody and TC find him on the run, mm-hmm. and she's coming back. I think she's getting food or beer. She's getting liquor.
Getting beer.
Yeah.
Getting beer for him.
And
he's going to ask her to marry him in San Francisco.
Yep. And Jody and TC. Yeah, and then it's just gone. It's in the ether because they threaten to blow her brains out if he doesn't just come with them without a fuss.
Yep. And so he leaves without another word, without a word of goodbye. And she hates him for years.
And that look on Tulip's face where she's just like, Jesse, is amazing. Like, Dylan, he's so good at the facial expressions.
And eyes.
He's so good at capturing the soul of somebody's eyes. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's just, this guy's amazing. And I love everything about his artwork in this. You know, I think he got some crap from people when this book was being, you know, published because they were like, oh, his art isn't complex enough. But it is. It really is very complex if you look at it, you know?
Yeah.
It's just it so really good. Is.
It's so gorgeous. And like, and you were right before talking about the panel switches, because it's a great, it's almost like, it's so filmic in a way, because it's a great cut from her coming to the empty bench and look on her face to today's Jesse, today's Tulip, learning that information, and she has the same look.
Yeah.
You know, manages to recreate it, but it's just, it's such a great cut.
Yeah.
You know, from young, fresh-faced Tulip to today.
Yeah.
Where she's now been punched in the face and, as we've learned, like, got seriously into drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
Immediately after that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I just, you know, it's really funny because this is one of those issues where I realized, and I always did, how much I love Tulip. Like, I just love Tulip. I love her as a character. I think she's great. She's just so hard-ass. And just that moment where she's like, I've been an asshole. Like, you know what I mean? You know, like, I've been giving this guy a hard time. It's just such a good reaction, you know?
Yep. But also his reaction is great because I'm a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Like, he knows, like, he could have just said, like, he could have told her those things, but he didn't want to go through it all.
Yeah. He didn't want to walk through it, and he didn't want her looking at him any differently because he was kind of a victim of these people, and he's afraid of them.
Right. Exactly. Like, the fear of them is so present all the way through all of this. And it's totally earned, because you're right. I mean, we watched his mother, his father, his mother, his dog, and his best friend die bloody at these people's hands.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy. And how big... It's really funny, because I'm looking at that page where Tulip has that look on her face. And it's just... It's amazingly done. Like, just the turn. Yeah. You can, like, he's so good. The Dylan is so good, because the turn in her is like, she's been so hard towards him. And this is sort of a moment of softness where she's like, oh my God, like, I've been wrong all this time. Absolutely fantastic. Anyway, Jesse gets taken from Tulip. He gets put in the coffin for a month. And that's where he, like, truly gives in.
Yep. And winds up in Anvil, and we're back to the beginning. We're even in Anvil, he still hates himself.
Yep.
But he was trying to be a good kid.
Yep. Yep. And that's kind of where he snaps as well, and is like, screw it. And I believe that that probably leads up to the point in the beginning of the series where he goes into the bar, right?
Exactly. It's the same night that he goes to the bar and starts all of the trouble that unfortunately gets everyone in Anvil killed.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Not that they didn't deserve it.
All of them.
Maybe not all of them. But, well, the town covered up a rape. I mean, come on.
That's true.
Anyway,
that's true.
Guilt by association. You're all guilty. Anyway, I'll be the Lord. So, but this is the issue where Tulip does get her head blown off.
Yeah.
And it's pretty hardcore. You know, Jesse's begging for her life, and you're like, and I remember reading this the first time and being like, no, this is not going to happen.
Yeah,
this is not going to happen.
Fooling.
It's not going to happen. They're not going to kill her. And it's just like this huge, it's like half the page.
Yeah.
Where she gets her head blown off.
Yeah. And just before, just the absolute freaking heartbreak of her last words, can't I even kiss him goodbye?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. It's just... oh, you're just like, your heart breaks. And it broke again when I read this, even knowing what was coming, even knowing that it was sort of going to be all right, you know.
Yep.
I was very much like, oh, it just hurt so much because you just didn't want her to go through that. Yeah. Oh, and then the next issue is The Turn, right?
It's The Turn. The next issue is great, man.
The next issue is great, where the Duke comes back.
We get the Duke at the end of it, but even before that, like, the next issue, Tulips is back alive almost immediately.
Yeah, because...
You know, like, Grandma and Jody are all, like, you know...
We got him. Like, this is...
We got him. We beat him. He's good.
Yeah. He's good. He's done. We're not going to, you know, we don't have anything else to worry about. He is done. And at that moment, he pretty much is, right?
Yeah, no, at that moment, he's broken. Like, totally broke.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, yeah, no, the Duke is right here. Because, yeah, I mean, this is where we get into that Jesse talks to John Wayne.
Yeah.
Which is an odd thing.
Well, this is the issue where that bit really comes to fruition, where you really get it. Like before, it was just kind of this odd thing, like maybe it was his imaginary friend or whatever. But I think this issue is where the spirit, John Wayne, really becomes a character, and becomes an integral part of this series. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because whatever he is, whether it's a figment of Jesse's imagination or the ghost of the spirit of John Wayne, whatever it is, you really get to see that this is a person or a thing that Jesse pulls his strength from.
Yep.
You know?
Yes. And it's really important and, you know, gives him the best advice and is really fully on his side. Like, the thing that's really interesting, I find, about this character and the way it's used, particularly in this arc, is that, in a way, up until this point, I remember reading, almost thinking that, well, the John Wayne that he's seeing, that could actually be God. You know, that could be. And this makes clear that it is not. It is something or some other thing else.
Yeah.
You know, he even makes the point that he started seeing this, started having these conversations with John Wayne before John Wayne was dead.
Yeah.
Like, this is something sort of deeper than that.
Yeah.
Than even just like a ghost or some representation. It's some deep part of Jesse himself.
Yeah.
Which I think is great.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, a big chunk of this issue is devoted to that, you know. And and it's just like, I love this line where he basically is talking to him, you know, because they reveal that part of the way that he was able to get through his time in the coffin, especially the first time, is that John Wayne comes to him and basically talks him through it and is like, I know you're scared, but I'm here. And I love this. You got two things on your side, son. You got what your daddy said the night before they shot him. And you got me here for you, just like I told you. And it's just like, bam.
Yeah.
Like, it solidifies in that speech that this has been a thing. This has been a creature, a guy, a character that Jesse has leaned on his whole life, especially during his darkest times, which this happens to be, right?
Right. Exactly. And he can lean on him here through this.
Yeah. And it's it's so brilliant to use John Wayne, because there really isn't, despite what you think of the person, you know, in real life. I don't like John Wayne movies. I never have. I don't think I've seen one that I've ever liked. I've seen The Searchers. Maybe I need to watch it again. But there's never been a John Wayne movie that I've seen where I'm like, that's not John Wayne. That's just John Wayne, right? Or the same thing that he does in every other movie. Or The Quiet Man. Maybe I like The Quiet Man. I did like The Quiet Man. But he's such a pure icon of the American West, or the fictional American West, that it's such a great character to use for this sort of thing too. Because you believe that if you had John Wayne as a friend, he would talk to you like this, and he would be almost like the dad that you never had, which is the guy who was going to be like, or the best friend that you needed, you know, who was going to be like, look, you're in the shit, but I'm going to get you through it. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly. Yeah. He's going to tell you straight. Like I said, I like that he agrees with Jody when Jody says he can't abide those who won't stand by himself, by their own. And that, you know, he gives Jesse some tough love, but he supports him and he's got his back. And like, that's what you need from that sort of sense of masculinity, of American maleness, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, he gives him a pretty stern talking to. I mean, I skipped to the end of the issue and, you know, he talks to him about the moment that he decided to give up and basically give in to grandma's wishes of being a preacher. And he uses a pretty harsh, politically incorrect expletive, you know.
That's right.
And all he said was one word. And it's just the sort of thing that, you know, you or me being from, you know, the Northwest would be like, you know what, you're an ass, you know. But to someone from the South, who maybe might not know a little better, or whose values are not New York values, you know, it would be a pretty cutting, you know, slur to say to somebody, you know?
Yeah, and certainly from the mouth of John Wayne.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a terrible slur, but it's also, and it's unfortunate to say it this way, but it's literally the cruelest thing that John Wayne could say to another living, to another male human being.
Exactly.
That's the lowest thing in his brain, which, again, is a political conversation for another time. And
But and this is also...
I was just saying, even just the change in sort of culture, that I don't know that in a comic book, even an adult comic book today, you could get away with that scene playing out that way.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, definitely not. Or would even be written that way, you know, with that sort of mentality. But I don't know, you know, Garth Ennis, he's kind of hardcore, you know. I mean, if you've read any of The Boys,
I've read The Boys.
I've read some of it, and he's pretty hardcore.
It's hardcore, but
I'm not afraid of anything.
No, but I just mean that, I feel like John Wayne's character would have to be slightly different to pull that off, you know?
Probably.
In the way that Jody uses the N-word pretty liberally and pretty awfully. But, Jody can because he's so terrible.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's not afraid of... I mean, that's another thing that's great about this book. It's not afraid to sort of dive into the dark corners of how people would behave. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And that's why I think it's very mature, because it's like, people say these words, people use them, it sucks, get used to it, you know? And they're not nice people, you know, generally speaking. But, you know, to continue on, this is also, while that's going on, Tulip is getting a good talking to by the Lord our Savior. And he basically is like, look, there's no need to be afraid. I've restored the word, which, you know, I've restored Jesse's power, which brings up a lot of interesting questions to me, because if God can shut off Jesse's power, what's he afraid of? You know?
I think the understanding is that the power of Genesis is greater. Like, the word of God is sort of the least part of all the things that Genesis knows.
Okay. That's a good point.
And he is afraid of facing Genesis. And I feel like this is, until later in the comic, this is about as close as he feels comfortable getting within physical proximity to Jesse.
Yeah.
In order to deal with him.
Yeah.
All the rest of the book, except one very memorable moment, he stays very far away.
That's true. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I mean, but it is an interesting point to me, where I was very much like, wait a minute, if he can just shut off the word, what's he afraid of, you know?
Right.
So there's a lot of mystery, but at the same time, you're absolutely right, because he decides to deal with Tulip and not Jesse. So there must be some sort of limit to, you know, quote unquote, God's power.
Yeah, exactly. There's something there, but also just this is like for me that like that moment that I love Tulip more than ever is right here, where you know God talks and she is literally looking at the face of God.
Yeah,
he's drawn to be beautiful and resplendent in his light and his glory. And after his long speech about how much he loves Jesse and how he's actually going to basically let them kill his whole family to prove his love and his good graces, Tulip has just the best line when he asks her, what do you think he'd say to me? Hmm? And she says, I think he'd say, cut the shit.
Yeah, exactly. I'm
like, yeah. Just the thing you want to be able to say to God.
Yeah, especially you know? Like after you've been just resurrected. Like
yes.
He basically put the wheels in motion to have you killed. And then he brought you back. And she still got, you know, the chutzpah to be like, you know what? Screw off. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know? And at that point, that's when, well, you know, John Wayne finishes his talk. And it's like, I love this. You're right. This is what Jesse says. You're right. I let him beat me. I quit on my dad and I quit on you. I don't know why you didn't just do the same. And he's like, darn it, Pilgrim. It's because we're partners. And it's just like, that's so, and that's another great thing. It encapsulates the book. It's like, this is why these people are together, because they form a bond, him and Tulip, Cassidy, whatever, and they're going to go through hell. And you have friends like that. I've had friends like that. I have a wife like that. You know, they're just going to go through it with you no matter what. Like hell or high water, we're in it together and that's it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And it's just so great. It's such a great moment, you know, in the book. And
so perfect.
And that's when the turn happens, because he gets the word back and you know, TC comes into his room and is like, you know, time to go or whatever. He's got a shotgun.
Yeah.
And then the word comes back. And this is where I had a little bit of trouble, because I was like, oh, the only reason that Jesse's able to take him out is because he has the word. I kind of would have liked it better if he'd have decided not to use the word, you know?
I do, but I mean, TC is such a little shit.
Yeah.
That I don't care about it.
Yeah.
And then they get to that point, you know, in the next book, when he faces off against Jody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I like that they're both sort of surprised by it. And I don't feel like I feel like he, you know, all he does is get Jody to drop the weapon.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, or TC to drop the weapon.
And then it's
he
a fair
just
fight.
Shit out of it.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That's true. That's true.
TC is always the shitty of them. He's the shittier one, always.
Well, he's disgusting. He'll screw anything that moves. I mean, he's a chicken fucker. But
exactly.
You know. But yeah, you're absolutely right. That's a really good point, that all he does is like drop the gun and now we're going to have it out. And it's like, okay, that's great. And then from then on in, you know, John Wayne is like, here we go. You can talk the talk, now walk the walk. And he's like, you got it. And it's such a great moment. It's
great,
such
last
a great
splash
moment.
Page. It's so great.
Yeah, yeah.
Of him just sliding out. And, you know, this time through, I had sort of forgotten that at this point, even with, you know, John Wayne's help, he still thinks Tulip's dead.
Yeah,
like
he
thinks he's going to avenge Tulip.
Yeah.
Not, you know, not free her. And that's just the best.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, the final issue is the climax. And boy, is it ever, you know.
Oh, man. So it's climactic.
It's so good. And, you know, I have to say, I love the cover of this issue. Glenn Fabry does an amazing job. And it's such, like, sort of an homage to the Wizard of Oz, you know, with, like, being thrown up into a tornado and stuff like that. But, it, you know, I mean, from the opening where Tulip is basically, like, you know, saying, like, why do you have to do it like this? Like, why do you have to be so cruel about it? Why do you have to, why didn't you just be direct about it? Why didn't you just approach us? And, you know. God is like, all right, enough.
All right.
You know, I am a loving God. But don't push it, you know? And it's like, and she's kind of left there like, uh-oh. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I may have him off.
Just love, like, that first line is just, again, is one of my favorite. If I say I am the Lord your God, then I am the Lord your God.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, just so frustrating for him.
Yeah, exactly. It's so great. That's so great. But yeah, I mean, he basically tells her, you know, don't mess with me. I'm leaving. Yep. I've brought you back. Jesse's going to be okay. And I've done this because I love you. He forgets to mention that he was in cahoots with Grandma and that he's the reason that they were that they got kidnapped in the first place.
Exactly.
But yeah. So for the rest of the issue, you basically see Tulip take out the grandma or basically kick her out of her chair. And you really get a sense of the power that Jesse has because he actually walks out onto the front lawn, sees Jody with his, you know, cross-burning partners, and all he says is, "Burn, you fuckers."
Yeah.
And they light up, almost like Firestarter.
Exactly. It's like a new level of the power. Like, he could make people do things, but just telling them to burn and they start burning is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And it's great because his eyes turn red and, you know, everyone lights up. And everyone freaks out except for Jody. He keeps his calm and he jumps into, like, a trough full of, like, water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, because Jody's the smart one.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And then comes the showdown, which is just fantastic.
Oh, just pages and pages with them beating the crap out of each other.
Yep, exactly. And at the same time, right, Tulip takes out TC.
Yep.
I love her line right before he's like, his face is all screwed up because Jesse didn't actually kill him. He just beat the hell out of him. And she basically has a shotgun. And I love the line, "Well, the Coos does have a name. It's Tulip." And the panel is just her holding the shotgun barrel to him, like to camera.
Yep.
And it's just like, you know what's coming.
Oh, it's so perfect.
Yeah.
It's so right on.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, finally.
And finally, you know, the big fight that, you know, happens and Jesse wins.
Yeah.
You know, and for a second, it looks like he might not, you know.
No. For a second, Jody's got him by the throat and it's, you know, you think it's over.
Yeah.
And he's trying to get him to say one last time.
Yep. And he won't do it. He takes a chunk out of his arm with his teeth, and that surprises him, and then that's it. He basically steps on his spine and then chokes him to death. And it's a very satisfying sequence.
Oh, it's so satisfying.
You know,
it's so satisfying.
It's just great because, you know, there's so many stories where it's like you've got the bad guy, and I think writers tend to screw up sometimes, like where it's like they don't, you know, like that's a problem with like Tim Burton's Batman movie, is like the climax is not titanic enough, you know what I'm saying, or like big enough, you know, and in this issue, it is like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is what you want to see. You want to see the knockdown, drag out fight, and you want to see Jesse just kick his ass, you know, into oblivion. And he does it.
And he really does. He really does it and does it beautifully. But even as he goes, Jody still gets that one great last dig in.
Yeah.
When he's lying there all broken and bleeding out, he looks at him and says, "Proud of you, boy."
Yeah.
You're like, oh,
you're just
Jesus.
Like, oh, my God. Yeah, like he's satisfied or something. Like, like this is just what I wanted, you know? And you're just like, oh, screw you.
Screw off, you abusive monster.
Yeah, he's just horrible. But then grandma her oxygen tank blows up and she gets thrown out of the house in flames, and it's another great sequence where Jesse's like, "Burn, you witch, burn," you know. Yeehaw! It's like a great moment, you know, and you're just so
satisfaction,
and you're so happy for him. You're just like, fuck her, she deserves everything she gets, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, at that point, like you said, he seems to be pretty much victorious, but he doesn't know that Tulip's alive.
Yeah, he still thinks Tulip is dead, and he's just avenged her. and gotten his dad's lighter back.
Fuck communism.
Fuck communism.
They sold one of those. DC Comics sold one of those.
Oh my god! I would. So I gotta find one.
Or just get a Zippo and get it done.
I'm a former card-carrying socialist, and I want to have a lighter that says "fuck communism."
Fuck communism.
That's how awesome that
is. It's so great. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so then, you come to, you know, Tulip reveals herself, and they're just like, he's just like, I better not be dreaming, you know. And they embrace and they hug, and that's it. Until the end of the world. And an extremely satisfying conclusion to, I mean, I think is one of the most epic, you know, I mean, all right, I've gone on and on in the past podcast as to how much I love Preacher, but this is definitely one of the best arcs in comic history, I have to say.
Right.
In my opinion.
It really is. Like, that last panel is so perfect.
Yeah.
And it also, you know, is such a great release for the audience because we've now gone through, what, 12 issues of Jesse trying to win Tulip back.
Yeah.
We've heard their whole, or most of their whole tragic love story. And to see them kissing in front of this fire, it's just perfect.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? It's great. It's because... what's great about it is that it really ends up being, as far as the whole series goes, you know, this could be the moonlighting moment. This could be the moment that, you know, very much like ruins the series, right?
Yep.
And it doesn't. Like, this is why Preacher, to a certain extent, is such a good piece of writing, because it's not just built on the tension between them, like will they or won't they, you know?
Right.
It resolves that within the first 12 issues and you're done. And from then on, it really is a great example of how do you have two characters romantically involved in sort of an adventure story or a fantasy or whatever you want to call it, and still keep it interesting, you know?
Exactly. Like, it becomes much more about how will they survive.
Yeah.
And not even like how will their love survive, just how can they make it in this world, in this crazy, crazy world.
Yeah. Especially having experienced, you know, everything that they've experienced. I mean, at this point, they've met vampires, they've met God, they've been assaulted by redneck hooligans. You know, I mean, it really is. And then, you know, from here on, it just gets crazier.
Right. Oh my god.
Yeah. So,
oh my god, it gets like so much nuttier. Holy crap.
Yeah. I mean, again, another great, fantastic arc. And it's interesting because for this to play out, you really did have to remove Cassidy from the playing field.
Oh, absolutely. It would not have worked with Cassidy involved at all.
It really had to be like their story, you know, like and their moment to shine. And that's what's great about it. You know, it's Jesse's backstory, but it's also the arc that solidifies their relationship. It's basically a really great resolution to the series.
A really perfect resolution to the series. Like, really right on.
And from here on in, you know, their relationship just gets really strong, and they grow together, and some crazy stuff happens, which I can't wait to keep reading.
Exactly. I can't wait to get into the wackiness to come ahead, the Holy Grail, and just more time with the Saint of Killers.
Yes.
That's always fun.
Yeah. Well, the next arc looks to be great, Hunters. So we'll get to that in a couple of weeks or so. But I got to say, this All in the Family thing, you know, it's not Carol O'Connor's show, but this arc was fantastic. Like, I loved it.
It really is.
It is one of my favorite pieces of reading in comic-dom history. And, you know, once again, I can't recommend the series enough. I don't know that they're going to do this on the TV show. To me, it looks like the TV show is going to be very different. But you know what? Comics is the superior medium anyway. So that's my opinion.
It's going to be interesting no matter what. It's going to be interesting to see how this turns out. At any rate.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you for joining me on this episode of Part-Time Fanboy, Jason.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on again.
Cool. It's always a pleasure. And everyone check out Deep Cut Nerd, right?
Deep Cut Nerd. That's right. You can find us at on Twitter at Deep Cut Nerd Pod. And we're also on iTunes.
Awesome. Oh, that's great. So you've got a Twitter account. And is there a website yet or...
We don't really have a website. We've got something through Podmatic. But if you go to our Twitter feed, we can get you to it.
Cool. Awesome, man. Well, thank you for coming on. That is my friend Jason Holtham, and I am Christian Horn. And we have been talking about All in the Family from Preacher, which were issues, what were they again? Issues 8 through 12 of the... Mm-hmm. Fantastic Vertigo DC Comics series, Preacher. My name is Christian Horn. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back with another chunk of Preacher analysis sometime in the next couple of weeks. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Hard Time Fanboy. Part-time. Part-time fanboy.